And then, so I'll leave that there.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Could you tell me who you are and what your website is?
What do you do?
My name is Andrew Johnson, and I run a website called checktheevidence.com. I grew up in Yorkshire, and I went to Lancaster University in 1980, graduated in 1986 with a degree in computer science and physics. Since then, I've worked in software engineering, software development, a number of projects sort of small to medium size. Ended up getting into education, and I worked in further education and higher education for about 2 years full time. Currently, I now work part time for the Open University as an associate lecturer in tutoring in a computer subject, computer related subject. I also assess disabled students as part of my work for the Open University. And I got interested in what I like to call alternative knowledge at an early age. I had a sighting of two objects in the sky when I was about 9 or 10 years old, coming out of a youth club in the evening, about sort of 9 o'clock in the evening. Saw these two star-like objects circling around one another, and I was a good friend at the time. I knew they couldn't be planets or stars or satellites, so I was knowledgeable enough about astronomy at that age to know that they couldn't have been that. So I was interested in the sort of topic of UFOs. I got a book, somebody bought me a book on the subject at about the same age, about 9 or 10 years old. But then I also ended up doing a project about UFOs and flying saucers for part of my general studies A-level project. And I managed to get in touch with somebody called Tony Dodd, who I was put in touch with through one of my teachers. And at that time, he introduced me to a case that he was researching about an abduction where a woman had had about an hour of missing time. She lived not too far from Skipton, where I grew up. And she described having this missing time, as I said, being abducted, taken up into a craft, meeting these beings, and describing these things that they said to her. That sort of project, you know, was quite detailed, really, for the time, I think, for it. It was about 20 pages long, something like that. I've always been interested since that time, and then I became more interested once I got the internet, and in 2003, when I got my first broadband connection, I discovered something called the Disclosure Project, and this was being put together by somebody called Dr. Stephen Greer, and that was kind of put together as a press conference in 2001 at the National Press Conference Club in Washington, D.C., which is a very prestigious venue, several sort of tens of press people were there at the time. And when I discovered this in 2003, I'd never heard of it. I'd never heard of this event. It happened 2 years earlier with 21 witnesses, either military or involved in significant civilian roles, such as John Callahan, the head of the FAA, who described a case where a Japan Airlines flight in 1986 had encountered an object as they were coming over Alaska, and that was all kind of hushed up. And he described the meeting that he had with some of the people from President Reagan's administration about having captured this UFO on radar. So these were very significant events. So that really got me interested in the UFO question in a big way, because I knew there was no doubt at all in my mind then that this had been covered up, and there was some very important information which had been put out then. So I began to research a lot of other topics, having access to this always-on internet connection gave me sort of very wide-ranging access to all kinds of information at that time, which has increased since, of course. I then started to find out about things like 9/11, and I started to read things which said that the official story of 9/11 was not as we'd been told. And that led me on initially to discovering these ideas that the World Trade Center towers weren't destroyed by fire and jet impact, but somebody had said that they planted bombs in the building, and that this is what brought the towers down. And initially I thought, well, looking at the way the towers came down in 8 to 10 seconds each approximately, and they were the sort of the official times, there must have been something else involved, because buildings don't fall down just because they, you know, have a serious fire. I mean, we had the Madrid building, a hotel which burned for 24 hours, I think in 2004 or 2005, didn't come down, didn't collapse, it wasn't destroyed, it was gutted, but it wasn't, the structure was still intact. So, you know, I then began to realise that the official story of 9/11 couldn't be true, because if you look at the basic physics of the situation, and if you look at how the towers were destroyed, it just doesn't add up, the story doesn't add up. And I got involved with a research group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and because I was associated with the Open University, that gave me a kind of sort of way of joining that group, as it were, although I was surprised that they actually invited me. And through that group I got in touch with another lady called Dr. Judy Wood, and she had been studying the World Trade Center destruction, and to my surprise she kind of ruled out the bombs as being the cause. And when I started to study the research that she'd put together, I began to realise that what she was saying must be correct. And the basic thing that she pointed out was that the towers turned to dust. They didn't explode, they weren't blown up by bombs, they turned to dust. And I looked at the pictures that she'd posted on her website and looked at some of the other videos which I'd already seen, but decided to re-examine them, and I could see she was right. That's actually what happened. The buildings had turned to dust. So, this
one, can I just come in and ask you about the actual website and check the evidence and what thinking kind of behind that?
Yeah, the thinking behind this is really to provide access to information that's not readily available elsewhere. I decided in about 2006 that I would archive some of the material that I'd collected so that other people could access it for free. So I downloaded a lot of audio recordings and some videos, some video clips. And this was in the days when things like YouTube were only starting to get going. They're just sort of getting popular. And so I started to archive these things on the website, initially in a sort of fairly basic format, and later on I introduced what's called a content management system to sort of improve the layout of that and the access to the information and make it searchable and that sort of thing. But it was really, the rationale behind it was simply to give people free access to information. And so I also started to offer DVDs at cost price, some of which I'd made myself, things like PowerPoint presentations, which I'd made into a DVD format so that people can just watch them on an ordinary television. Started to sell little booklets and leaflets. And this was really my way of actually acting as my own publisher, really. So I didn't have to try and expend a lot of costs getting things printed myself. You know, if I did it myself, there wasn't the cost of printing involved. I worked out cheap ways of printing things and cheap ways of making discs.
Can you give me a brief overview of the content?
Yes. I mean, the primary function is to provide evidence. It's not, you know, mentioned before, that it's not about conspiracy theory. A lot of people call it conspiracy theory. Well, no, that's not what it's about. It's about looking at the evidence as to whether something is true or not. And the content really covers, for example, information about 9/11, of people interviewed at 9/11 with their own research and analysis. Things like the UFO subject, or the disclosure subject, as some people are now calling it, and the evidence which shows we've been visited by extraterrestrials over the centuries. Things like stories about the climate, for example, we hear about global warming and climate change, but there is a lot more to it than that. Things like chemtrails I've got on there. I also have another section about the Apollo moon missions. That's quite small already, but there's a lot of questions which can be raised about those, which again, if you study the evidence and the way the astronauts would behave, for example. Correct. It's really to allow people to explore some of the evidence which is commonly portrayed as a conspiracy theory. Actually, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's actually evidence that something has happened about which we're not being told the truth by the other more recognised and more regularly used sources, such as the mainstream media. Those areas that I just mentioned are areas where I feel that information has been withheld from regular sources.
Who's
the information? Well, the mainstream media is not really covering things to the degree that they should. For example, if we take the example of the Disclosure Project, I never heard that about that on the BBC in this country. I know that there was some coverage in the USA on, you know, sort of the local CBS channels and that sort of thing. But you know, if you go onto the BBC website, you can't actually find anything except one web posting about the Disclosure Project. So
we had a slight technical problem.
So, if you go onto the website, you can't actually find anything about the Disclosure Project other than one web page, which doesn't really describe accurately what happened. I mean, the headline on the web page was UFO spotters slam cover-up. I mean, for somebody who's been underground in a capsule managing a Minuteman nuclear missile to have the nuclear missile's control system shut down when a glowing orange object appears over the base, that's not a UFO spotter. That's a captain in the military who's had his nuclear weapon systems compromised by something of unknown origin, and he has documents to prove it. So that's not a UFO spotter. So that is the BBC withholding information about this witness testimony, which you can prove over and over and over again with different subjects. My goal was to provide people with easy access to that sort of information. Some of it was sold on other websites in different forms, but I basically, for example, recorded some radio interviews and made those available as podcasts for people. So you can find a lot of that on the website, so that you don't have to pay for it. All you need is an internet connection and time. So that was the main goal.
Can we talk a bit now about the need to get this information out there for the public, and how you think the government reaction is to this with the UFO information?
Well, I think that there is a need to get this information out to people and make it available, because the end result of it is it affects our everyday life very strongly. For example, one of the things we mentioned earlier was things to do with things like propulsion and energy systems. If we come to understand that through the evidence we can know that we have got these craft visiting us and doing things here, interacting with us, which has been encountered on many occasions by people like Travis Walton, then what sort of energy system are they using to power their craft? And how could we use that ourselves to replace, for example, all the fossil fuel-based systems that we have? And this was one of the themes of the Disclosure Project as well, back in 2001, that it does seem, when you look at the evidence, that some groups, some secret groups, some paragovernmental groups, know about this, They don't think UFOs are a conspiracy theory. They actually have hardware which they've obtained either through them being shot down or crashing at various times. We have an interesting account from Peru, I think, in the 1990s that not many people know about, that a military witness there says he was involved in the recovery. So if they've got this technology, then you have to ask, well, why hasn't it been made available to us so that we can, stop all these, effects of pollution that we're constantly being told about? Why are we being subjected to having to use fossil fuel-based technologies for all our transport? So once you come to this realization that this sort of technology is in fact real, then I certainly felt duty-bound to provide information to people which would allow them to draw the same conclusion.
Can you talk about how
by all means, one of the examples I mentioned earlier was 9/11. And following on from what I was saying earlier on, I was in contact with Dr. Judy Wood. She had shown how the towers were destroyed, not using bombs, not using aeroplanes, but using something else, which she termed a directed energy weapon. And what she ended up doing was she decided to set up a court case because the US had a body called NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology. They were tasked with producing reports about how the World Trade Center was destroyed, which they did, and they published those reports in 2005, and they used a number of contractors to produce those reports, because NIST just produced reports, they don't actually have expertise in anything in particular. And they're a non-regulatory group as well, they don't make any laws or anything like that. And so she was basically able to point out to NIST that their reports were fraudulent because they were entitled to the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. In fact, the collapse did not happen. The towers didn't collapse. They turned to dust. They returned to dust as they came to the ground. So that was basically what she was pointing out. And she also pointed out the evidence of what was termed directed energy weapons. Which I got interested in. Now, I wrote a press release to point to say that Dr. Wood and another professor, Dr. Morgan Reynolds, had submitted two legal challenges to NIST in the form of what's called the Keytown case. And they had challenged NIST to basically produce correct reports because they declared that their reports were fraudulent, NIST reports were fraudulent. And I sent a press release about this to all of the UK media, BBC, ITV, and the press release was basically to say that two US professors have sued US government contractors for fraud, and that was never published anywhere. Nobody wrote to me, nobody asked me any questions, there was no news bulletins, I was in communication with somebody in the BBC and asked him to get this published, and he basically said he couldn't do that. So really, that proves there is a cover-up, because this is a legal case, just like any other. It's in the Southern District of New York. You could go at that time and look at the documents on the court system. You know it wasn't a hoax, because they were in the court system. But this wasn't covered. So the BBC has a charter in which it's supposed to cover all viewpoints. This viewpoint was never covered. The evidence was there to prove that it actually happened. So that it's a cover-up. It's as simple as that.
Can you kind of give
me around a little bit? In this country, do you have a lot of knowledge about the general people on the basis? Well, I myself have had no direct experience of interacting with any other beings or species that I'm aware of, not at any conscious level. I don't particularly know anybody in this country who's had, that I know well, who's had experiences or that they told me any depth about them. One of the very interesting cases, which I think is backed up by significant evidence, is Travis Walton's case, and he was in Snowflake, Arizona in 1975, and he was basically on a logging contract in the forest there, and he finished the sort of shift with his buddies about dusk, sort of 6-7 in the evening, that sort of time as I recall. And he went back to the truck, and they all drove off back to town. And as they were driving back down the hill, he came across, they actually all saw from the truck a flying saucer coming across. They actually thought the forest was on fire, but it actually wasn't, and they saw this flying saucer. And so he jumped out of the truck and ran towards this thing, and then he was hit by some kind of beam, and he flew in the air at a distance of about 10 metres, something like that. And his buddies didn't actually see this beam, apparently. They did see him fly across and land on the ground, and they were just completely, frightened out of their wits. So they drove off. But about a mile down the road, it was his best friend who was driving, Travis's best friend. And he realised he shouldn't have just left Travis there because he could have been dead. What happened to him? So he dropped the other guys off just at the, more near the edge of the forest, and he drove back to try and get Travis. And Travis wasn't there. He'd gone. He'd disappeared. 5 days later, Travis turned up again, about 2 miles from town, and he told this story about having been taken up on this spacecraft. And his friends, in the meantime, when they went back to town without Travis, of course, everyone said, "Where's Travis?" And they said, "Well, he jumped out of the truck, ran toward the flying saucer, and then we went back and he wasn't there." And they said, "Don't be ridiculous, he was making that up, killed him." And they became suspects in his murder. And that case is all in the police records, so you know that it's not been made up, and they've made a film about it. And Travis Walton has spoken about this story for the last 30 years, over 30 years in fact. And he recounts that when he awoke, he was on a stretcher. He was looked at by these strange-looking beings. He tried to attack them with some cylinders which were on the side of where he was sitting. Then he started to walk around the ship that he was on. He'd written a book about this called Fire in the Sky. Then he encountered these more humanoid-looking beings, and one of them eventually put a mask over him, and then the next thing he remembers was waking up 5 days later. And he remembered nothing extra under hypnosis. And there are a number of cases like this which have witnesses. They're backed up by other evidence as well. Stan Romanek was another one in the States who's got these strange marks under his skin which are only visible under ultraviolet light. Those particular ones are not on the website. The main part of the UFO stuff on the website is the Disclosure Project stuff. And there are sort of one or two other areas that I looked at. For example, there is a story from this country which was investigated by Max Burns, and it's called the Sheffield Incident, where we had an instance of a flying triangle being seen over Dronfield and some other parts of Sheffield one evening. And then soon after this sighting of the flying triangle, there was a sighting of jets chasing this thing. And there was then a no-fly notice issued by the CAA for an area in the Peak District near Lady Bower Reservoir, which is not far from where I now live. So there is that case on there. People can read Max Burns' investigation of that, which is not very well known about in this country. There were reports in the press at the time of an air crash in the Peak District, headline riddle crash with apparently no wreckage. But it seems that there was a crash, but the search teams were actually deliberately sent to the wrong location so that they could recover this aircraft with another covert team and find out what actually happened from the guy that was involved. I mean, this sort of subject is, when you talk about cover-ups and aliens and Bigfoot and that sort of thing, it's called a conspiracy theory. I think this is a misnomer in many cases, because what I'm talking about is evidence. To decide whether something is true or not, you look at the evidence. And what I try to do is present that evidence in the form of, you know, video testimony, which again would be used in an ordinary court case if it were a different situation. Documents, for example, we talked about the nuclear missile case, that has documents to support that it did actually happen. So that's evidence as well, it's not theory. I myself, for example, if we talk about another subject such as chemtrails, I have written a report which is 20 pages long, it's got my own photographs, I've made videos of time-lapse photography, that is evidence, not theory. So that's the theme of it, to give you the basic information, the documents, the video, the audio testimony of people actually saying these things, as far as possible, first-hand testimony, which in other situations would be used in a court of law or in a scientific investigation to draw some conclusions. And that's what it's about.
Could you talk again about how
Yes, I think it is, because you know, we did talk about this being a revolution. I think it is because I regard myself now as my own publisher, and I make my own booklets, I make my own discs, and going back about sort of 7, 8, 9, 10 years, it just was not possible to do this. You know, I could produce a DVD for like 20 pence or something like that. So I can just give that away because I've got sufficient income now. Anybody who's interested, I can just literally give it away, and that's what's on the website. I say, if you can't afford this, then I'll send you it to them. And I've done that on several occasions. So I think it is an information revolution. We're now at a point in history where we've got access to almost unlimited information for free. Once you've got a broadband internet connection, your only real limit is time. The cost per, you know, megabyte of information has never been lower. So it is an information revolution, and I feel that the rise of technology and my own interest in technology, which also started when I was about sort of 16, and I went into, you know, doing computer subjects, which has enabled me, for example, to learn about desktop publishing, advanced word processing, DVD production. I've essentially taught myself all those skills and employed them in creating the website and in allowing me to provide information to other people on my own terms. You know, I don't have to go through a publisher and agree that I'm going to publish this and not that, you know, or I'm going to format it certainly. I can just do it myself, and then I can give it to them, you know, which gives me a, you know, free range over you know, what I want to do. Certainly, yes. I'm getting a mixture of public reaction, really. I do get emails to the website where people are very interested, and they do actually, you know, thank me for providing the information and allowing them to see how they've been deceived in many respects. That's at one end of the scale. You know, and I have had a couple of anonymous donations to the website, for example, things like that. Not huge sums, only like, you know, sort of 20 quid, 30 quid, that sort of thing, maximum. Which is I'm very, always very pleased to receive, not because I want the money, but because it means I'm having the right effect or the effect that I want to have. But at the other end of the scale, you know, some people just cannot handle what I'm telling them is true. You know, when I tell them there was a hurricane parked outside New York, and it was closest to New York at 8 o'clock in the morning on 9/11, they really just don't know what to do with that sort of information. You know, if I tell them the steel turned to dust, they might just turn around and say, well, so what? You know, it was Al-Qaeda that did it, and that's all I need to know. Thank you very much. Goodbye. So you do get that sort of reaction. Occasionally you'll get people who become offended about some of the 9/11 research, for example. Some people just think that talking about little green men is still silly, despite the fact that, for example, we had Buzz Aldrin talking about this monolith on Phobos, and that was a couple of months ago, and he said that on C-SPAN, that we should be going to Phobos because they found this monolith on it. And that was Buzz Aldrin, the astronaut, second man on the moon. So, you know, when you present that to people, they can sort of handle that a little bit more. They can begin to realize that is not, there's something strange going on with that. But, you know, I still get the reaction where people are just not interested and they just want to carry on with their own lives. And if that's what's right for them, then who am I to interfere with that? I can't, you know, it's that people have to come to the information themselves. What I think is the key is that you have people that are naturally curious, they need to be curious about what is actually going on, and then they will start to explore something. If they see something in the sky, they see something in the news, which they think, that's not quite right, there's something there which needs to be looked at more closely, then that may sort of hook them in into this looking at the evidence and finding out what they haven't been told.
Has it affected you personally
when your family referred to this? Well, I've been quite fortunate, I think, because as we talked about earlier, I've had the facility to do a lot of work at home and earn an income from doing that, so I can manage my own time as much as I choose. You know, I have very basic deadlines which are easy to meet, and I don't have a lot of problems finishing the work that I need to finish. So if I'm, you know, I can break into my work and answer emails, look at web pages, you know, and this sort of thing, set video rendering going on in the background while I'm finishing off reports. But in my family, you know, I tend to, I'm generally in a supportive environment on the whole. My wife, she works in the health service, National Health Service, and at one time I think she used to think, you know, there was something wrong with me or something, or I'd become obsessional, but it's really not like that, because, you know, I have children to collect from school, I have meals to make, you know, I make meals for my wife when she's working and stuff like that. So, you know, that sort of life, side of life is pretty conventional. And she's now starting to come to realise that what I'm saying is important. And she will, for example, help me with things like, you know, copying discs. So she'll put another disc in the burner, or she'll put a disc in the printer when I'm copying these discs to send out to people. She'll take this to the post office for me. If she's going that way, she has to leave the posting. So she's quite supportive in that sort of way. But she doesn't really sort of spend all the time that I do reading all the web pages and watching all the DVDs and listening to all the broadcasts that I listen to. And I have two children who are 9 and 11 currently. My daughter, who's 11, she has, you know, listened to a lot of what I've said, and I think she understands that things are not quite as clear-cut as some people are saying, you know. And she's looked at some of the stuff that I've put together about Mars, for example, that shows there are some very unusual things on Mars and there on the NASA website. And I've had some interesting visits about that. But to my website from NASA, about that, I should say. And I've told my daughter that if she talks about this too much, people at school won't believe her. And if she goes and reads all the standard textbooks, then she won't find what I'm telling her is true. So she knows about that. And so, you know, she has her own sort of life to lead in school and, you know, get to grips with that. So I don't really push it onto her. If she asks me a straight question, I'll give her a straight answer. And she's, you know, she I think she's got a reasonably good balance with that. My son, he sort of he's still a little bit younger, but he's getting to understand a little bit now of the, you know, things are not always that straightforward. But they're going to grow up with it. They're going to grow up with what I'm telling them. But as long as I tell them that other people won't believe them when I tell them, when they tell them what I've told them, I think that's about the best that I can do. The rest of my family are aware of certain things that I'm involved with. I have my one of my sisters, she decided to ask me for a copy of my book, which I sent to her in the last couple of months. She's really the first person in the family to actually directly ask for information. I've sent a few bits and pieces out to people, but they don't, you know, they don't always necessarily react. So, you know, it's overall, it's just a very sort of low level really of reaction. They're sort of aware of it, but they don't really get involved in it in a big way.
Just to finish off, where do you think
sure. I mean, you know, we mentioned before about things like the standard theories, the Big Bang, and, you know, there's this huge explosion 13 or 15 billion years ago, and everything expanded out from that. But really, again, if you go and look at the evidence for the Big Bang, there's a lot of contradicting evidence. The main evidence which supports this Big Bang theory is, one of the main things is this, what's called microwave background radiation. But there are other people who've got explanations for the microwave background radiation. And again, if you look at the evidence, it calls certain aspects of the Big Bang Theory into question. And you can look at things like the expanding Earth theory, which was being put forward by Neil Adams and others, that the planet Earth was actually growing since it first formed, and all the continents were spread out, and the oceans came a lot later. And that was something I only came across in the last couple of years. But as regards our place in the cosmos, and things like a belief in God or a belief in a deity of some kind, you know, I really strongly identified with the conclusion of somebody called Wilbert Smith, who was a Canadian radio engineer in the 60s. And he interacted with two beings who he called the boys Topside. One was called Afra and one was called Tyler. He even had names for them. And he was told, basically, that the human race in the form of man, this is a bit of an old-fashioned way of saying it, but this is how he described it, is spread throughout the cosmos and is incredibly ancient. And I think this is correct, because if you look at the evidence and you look and study Travis Walton's case, you study these instances where nuclear weapons have been deactivated in the presence of objects hovering over them, there do seem to be other beings and other entities interacting with us, not always in ways that we can see or feel. Occasionally we can see them. There are people who say they've met them and interacted with them. In various ways, George Adamski is one, ridiculed, but there seems to be something in his stories if you study some of his evidence too. So I do think, from the evidence, you can conclude that the human race is part of something much bigger, you know, a cosmic family, if you will. It may sound trite, it may sound Star Trek-y, or whatever, however you want to call it, but if you look at the evidence for long enough, and you listen to enough people and their experiences, you either have to conclude that that is correct, or that all these people are simply deluded idiots who are lying. And if you look at the way that they talk rationally about everything else, you can't conclude that they're deluded. You can't conclude that they're lying. So you have to conclude that they're telling the truth. You look at things like how the pyramids were constructed and how that's beyond even our current technology. There must have been another advanced technology that was able to do that. You look at places like Coral Castle in Florida, and how that was constructed by one man in the 1920s and 30s, Edward Lee Scarnham, you can see that there is another technology at work. You look at the destruction of the World Trade Center and the evidence there, and there is another technology at work. So I think what we're seeing is the human race is part of something much bigger, and science really at this point, regular mainstream science, is very much a reductionist type of system, which basically says, well, you know, there might be extraterrestrial life, but we can't prove it, and there isn't any evidence anyway, so we won't publish any serious scientific papers about it. They take the view that there's no evidence, which means that they must conclude that Travis Walton is lying, and that the police record is inaccurate, and that Robert Salas, when he was saying that his missiles would be activated, he was lying, and the documents that he'd got were fake, and on and on and on. So you have to... I think really reconsider a lot of what basic scientific textbooks tell us, because other evidence from ordinary people tells us a completely different story, and that we are indeed conscious beings. Look at near-death experience, consciousness survives physical death. That's been proved essentially in clinical studies, as far as I'm concerned. But even religious bodies don't really take much account of that. So our consciousness is bigger than our physical bodies. Our consciousness can interact with other consciousnesses in various ways at various times, both after death and during other experiences, such as we talked earlier about the experience where you can have a dog at home and the owner going off to the pub. You can film them both, and you know, when the owner gets up from the pub to come walking back home, the dog will react. Now, how is that possible when the other person is half a mile away down the pub? It's because they have their consciousness has been interacting with the dog and the person. And this is Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenetic field idea. So once you open up to that side, and it's the same, look at scientific evidence for these things, it's just done in perhaps a less conventional sphere of study than you would do in a laboratory, this sort of thing. But nevertheless, it's making measurements, it's doing controls, you can look at these scientific studies, and they prove these things. It's just a question of the academic establishment can't deal with them, because it then negates a lot of the other conclusions that they've pushed and based their careers on, really.
Could you, just to finish off there, could you tell me,
yes, I think a lot of this is we seem to be being subjected to climate fear. Yeah, I think, as you said, I think the reason for the suppression is to do with helping to create climate fear and helping to create the idea that we don't have any options. We have to go along with certain things. We have to go along with limiting our carbon emissions. We have to go along with having a vaccine against swine flu. We have to go along with the banks operate in a certain way because of the credit crunch. We have to go along with all these security measures because otherwise terrorists will, hijack aircraft or break into the airports or blow things up or this sort of thing. So a lot of these things do seem to be geared towards creating fear within the general population. And other people, and I've written about this, and I tend to agree with them, that it's like we're being treated by cattle. I mean, why are we given these little, four-wheeled rubber vehicles to drive around in when we have got anti-gravity craft that work? And we've had them since at least the end of the Second World War, if you look at the evidence. Somebody must have a reason for wanting us to be largely entrapped in that situation. We've had things like the electric car, which would make petrol engines much more efficient. So how come we haven't had those in general usage? We have a little bit with various models. But so there is an overall agenda to keep people in a state of fear, to keep their consciousness restricted so that they're not aware of our interaction with other beings or the consciousnesses. There is definitely an agenda in place, and there does seem to be a ruling body which is pulling the strings behind the scenes, a paragovernmental body. People give this various names, I tend not to know what name to give it, but again, you hear various groups that talk about. So somebody seems to be feeding off our fear, I think. They need our fear to, as either as some kind of nutrition or as an energy source. That's the only thing that seems to make sense to me as to why things are like they are. They seem to need to put us into a particular situation to keep us in a state of fear.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Don't need to be stopped before you see it. We'll see if it's